Hi, this is Coach Caroline Miller, and today I have Dr. Jessica Tracy, who is the Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of British Columbia. A recent piece of research she did with a fellow researcher caught my eye in June, and I really wanted to talk to her about pride and some of the components of pride, but just a little bit more about her background. She's the co-editor of the Self-Conscious Emotions, Theory and Research, and has also published articles in Annals of the New York Academy of Science, Psychological Science, New Directions in Psychological Science, and Psychological Inquiry, as well as a number of other places, but more specialized journals. Her research has been funded by the National Institute of Mental Health and the Social Sciences and Health Research Canada, Council of Canada. As I was just saying, Dr. Tracy has a lot of awards. One that I highlighted here is been honored by the New Scientist International Essay Award. She grew up very close to where I live in Washington, D.C., received a Ph.D. in social personality psychology from the University of California, Davis, and a B.A. from Amherst College. So welcome, Dr. Tracy. I will call you Jess. Nice to have you join me today.
Thanks, Caroline. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you. And you're in Canada, and I'm in the United States, and it's a little cooler where you are than it is here. Let me just start with kind of a broad brush question here. Who has high self-esteem, and how does it correlate with well-being?
Well, in terms of so self-esteem, what a lot of research suggests, and there actually are conflicting views on this, but the general thinking about self-esteem is that it's a pretty good thing to have, that if it's genuine, if you feel good about yourself and that's really based in actual accomplishments and sort of genuine feelings of self-liking is what we call it, that's a good thing. And it's going to relate to having a generally positive sort of personality. You'll be more agreeable, conscientious, open to experience, extroverted, all that sort of stuff, less likely to be neurotic and emotionally unstable, and likely to be sort of a productive person who is well-liked by others and that sort of thing. And this all makes sense because self-esteem, what we think is self-esteem, is it's sort of a functional thing. We evolve to have self-esteem because it tells us that we're liked by other people, and you know, it makes sure we like ourselves and take care of ourselves and make sure that we are the kind of person that other people will like, so we won't get rejected by the group. Mm-hmm. The sort of conflicting issue on that I kind of alluded to is that there are kinds of self-esteem that aren't likely to be so good. And a lot of people have pointed out the pitfalls of self-esteem, or the dark side of self-esteem is what it's been called in the news. And typically what people are talking about there is narcissism. So when self-esteem is not based on real accomplishments or genuine feelings of self-liking, but rather is sort of this aggrandized, exaggerated sense of self where people inflate how good they are and self-enhance and maybe even actually deep down don't feel so good about themselves, that kind of self-esteem is not related to good stuff, and that actually has a lot of problems.
Tell me more about the problems that occur in maybe even a well-known person, either in the past or in the present, who you would say everyone can relate to is having not authentic self-esteem, a little bit of, you know, self-aggrandizement that could be an example of hubristic pride, which is what I want to talk to you about.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the problems are if you have this sort of false sense of self and experience hubristic rather than what we call authentic pride, you end up kind of looking for every opportunity to self-enhance rather than coming into the world, you know, genuinely and sort of having a realistic appraisal of your accomplishments and what you can do in every situation. Every situation is instead going to be an opportunity for how can I make myself look good? How can I prove that I'm better than other people? And what you get is problems in relationships. People who are narcissistic are known to have really, really problematic relationships, typically because they're constantly trying to show that they're better than others, which makes people kind of hard to get along with. Mm. And it's actually a conflict for them with relationship partners, too, because they're often torn between making sure their partner knows that they're better than them, but also making sure that they have a partner who looks good to the outside world, right? Because it's sort of like you want other people to know, well, I can get this great partner, and yet, you know, there's limits to how great the partner is, so sort of an interesting relationship issue in narcissism.
Wow.
In terms of well-known narcissists, it's a tricky question. There's a lot of famous ones that we've written about in the past, or usually we try to stick to like scientists to avoid, you know, annoying anyone, but there's a lot of famous sort of Nobel laureates who have written biographies and you read them and you're like, wow, you know, that person is really sort of egotistical and arrogant. And it's a tough thing because one thing about narcissism is there's self-enhancement in terms of I think I'm better than everyone else. I'm very focused on the self and I'm focused on making myself look good. Mm-hmm. But I might actually be better than everyone else, mm-hmm. right? So there's a question of how realistic those self-appraisals are. And people define narcissism in different ways. The way that I think of it is, you may very well be the best person in the room. You know, you may very well be the smartest person in the room, but you can still be narcissistic if your focus is on constantly exaggerating that and boosting yourself up and making sure that you look better than everyone else rather than just sort of interacting in a genuine way with others and the world. So, you know, I think there's lots of adaptive and successful narcissists out there. I think a really good example of this is Bill Clinton, actually. And I'm a huge, huge Clinton fan, so this shouldn't be taken as any kind of negative thing. Mm-hmm. But I think he's someone who is incredibly successful, incredibly intelligent, you know, has done amazing, amazing things. And yet a lot of his focus is probably on his own sort of charisma and success and power and that sort of thing. And that's probably part of why you see all the problems that he had where, you know, despite having huge successes, there was always a part of him that was creating problems and that, you know, couldn't sort of keep it together to be a pure success. So.
Wow. Now, what you're describing in terms of narcissism and people who feel the need to constantly build themselves up and let other people know how great they are, how does this correlate with extroversion? Because my guess is that you create all kinds of interpersonal difficulties, as you just suggested. So would one of the signs be, if you're kind of going through a reflective moment of is this me or is this not me, would be that you've driven a lot of people out of your life and that you, perhaps your extroversion has not worked for you, it's worked against you?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate. You know, I think I don't know that there is any consistent positive correlation between extroversion and narcissism. I think it sort of probably varies. So some narcissists can really enjoy being with other people, kind of the Bill Clinton type, right, where it's all about the charisma and feeding off that attention from others, whereas there's other kinds of narcissists who are much more like, I'm so much better than everyone else, I just don't want to deal with other people, you know, and that's sort of the more introverted, disagreeable narcissist. And there are often, it's been found that there's correlations between disagreeableness and narcissists. They're not particularly likable people in many cases. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right, is that the typical reason that narcissists end up going into therapy when they do is not because they feel that they're narcissistic. It's because they're depressed and they're sad and they don't understand why people around them don't seem to appreciate them and why they don't seem to get what they think they deserve from work and they didn't get the promotion they deserved. And it's always the external world. It's not actually that they think there's something wrong with them. It's that they don't get why other people aren't seeing them for how great they really are. And for this reason, narcissism is one of the hardest sort of clinical personality disorders to treat. Therapists have a tremendous difficulty treating it because you sort of have to get past the person's own self-perceptions, and there's so many defenses that are there to protect the person from what's really going on underneath it all, which we think is really shame. You kind of have to get past all that in order to treat the person, and the person typically doesn't want to let go of all that. So it creates a major problem, I know, for clinicians.
Ah, that's so interesting. Okay, and so that leads me to a question around how do you intervene effectively if you recognize this is you and you're in therapy? You know, do you do, for example, more work around being humble or allowing other people to dominate a conversation? Because I want you to link this to authentic pride, which, you know, in the research I saw in June that you were co-authoring, you know, we're more likely to score high on extroversion, agreeableness, and genuine self-esteem and conscientiousness, the people who had authentic pride versus this narcissistic, hubristic pride. So how do you tilt that balance if you recognize that's who you are and become this other wonderful person, if that's even possible?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. And I think if you realize that that's your issue, I think that's a great start. You know, I think that, like I said, the main problem with narcissists and people who are feeling hubristic pride is this lack of self-recognition and, you know, the desire to feel so great about yourself, so constantly denying any kind of weakness. But for people who can recognize that that might be what's going on, yeah, I think there definitely are ways to sort of circumvent that and try to experience authentic pride instead. And I think that's the key thing, is that you don't have to feel bad about yourself. You don't have to feel, you know, I think the reason narcissists are the way they are is because of the shame. It's because, you know, we all have shame. We all have things that we feel bad about ourselves for. But narcissists, the way they cope with the shame is to deny it and push it down and pretend it's not there and just sort of instead build up this false sense of self. But I don't think that's necessary. You know, I think that there's ways of accepting, okay, I'm not so good at this, or okay, you know, I screwed this up, or I have a bad relationship with this person, or whatever it is, and accepting the flaws, but then also focusing on the things that you're good at, right? So everyone has some things that they're good at and some things that they like about themselves. And that's where authentic pride comes in, where this is a kind of pride that's based on genuine accomplishments, true achievements, and generally things that people work hard for. And I think that's the key, is that if you're not focused on sort of, you know, I'm great, I'm smart, you know, if I do well, it's because I'm the best one at work, and instead focused on, well, if I do well, it's because I worked really hard, and this was a project that I cared a lot about, I put a lot of time and effort into it, and maybe it went great, maybe there were problems, but either way, I'm proud of the part that I did. I think that's a really good way to start feeling this genuine sense of pride, and I think, you know, it's sort of like a combination. If you can feel the authentic pride, that sort of provides a balance. It's going to let you experience the shame and the negative without having that, you know, become everything and basically overpower everything and have to go back into the defensive narcissistic sort of posturing.
Hmm. And so is there also a link then in terms of feeling the authentic pride? And you said it comes from hard work, which I certainly think the research on grit and other kinds of research I've read in positive psychology back it up, is that, you know, the hard work is what produces the feelings of well-being. But is there a link between working towards intrinsic goals versus extrinsic goals?
Yeah, I think there probably is. I think, you know, feeling that this is sort of something that's important to you and that's why you're doing it, as opposed to, you know, it's something that makes you look good, that other people value, which I guess is more extrinsic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing we've thought about is, I think this is sort of relevant to that, is performance goals, which Carol Dweck has talked a lot about. Those are the goals that they look good, you know, and they're what everyone else wants.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found that, you know, that kind of stuff is more likely to be related to hubristic pride, that and people who sort of think about, I achieved this goal because, you know, I'm just a great person and it made me look good, and sort of these global stable attributions, that's what's related to hubristic pride. Whereas if you can focus on, you know, achievement-oriented goals that are more specific and that you work toward and that are more important to you rather than whether or not they make you look good to the outside world, then, yeah, I think that probably will be important for authentic pride.
I find this all so interesting. And I guess my last question is around humility. I was reading some research out of, I think it was Notre Dame, that some of the finest athletes are also the most humble.
Huh.
So it would stand to reason, given what you're saying about success and well-being, is that humility is probably more associated with authentic pride than hubristic pride.
Yeah, and actually this is something that I'm sort of beginning looking at much more than I have now. I think humility is a really interesting component of all this. And it's funny, I have this project where we're looking at alcoholics who are going through Alcoholics Anonymous recovery programs.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that these self-conscious emotions they experience are a really important part of their recovery. A lot of, you know, why people drink so much has a lot to do with shame. And so part of the AA program is learning other ways of coping with the shame besides drinking. And I think authentic pride might actually be one of the keys here, that you don't want to experience hubristic pride. You don't want to experience the sense of, I don't need anyone. I can, you know, I can handle this. I don't need any help. I'm fine. That's what leads to problems. But when you go to AA, you learn, it's okay, you know, you might have a disease, you might have this issue, but with the help of others, with your sponsor, you know, and I think there's a lot of emphasis on sort of a higher power or God in these programs,
mm-hmm.
basically acknowledging you don't have all the control, you don't have all the power, but with the help of others, you can control what you do each day.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the kinds of attributions and cognitive processing that should lead to authentic pride. That's, you know, telling people every day you have control over your behaviors. You might not have control of the larger disease or the world or how people treat you or anything else, but every day you have control over your behaviors, and with the help of all these other people and humility to recognize that you need that help, that's what's going to get you well. And so, yeah, I definitely think humility probably plays a big role in this.
And, yeah, and just kind of to wrap it all up in your words, why do you believe authentic pride is probably more correlated with a happy life than not?
Well, you know, I think part of it's theoretical. It's sort of, you know, it makes sense that it feels good to feel pride. It's pleasurable. We have these feelings for a reason. That is, you know, we evolved to feel things that are going to motivate us to achieve and do well and form good bonds with others in our community. So I think, you know, pride is definitely going to be a positive thing. And the research suggests that this is the case. You know, we found that authentic pride has these positive correlates in terms of, you know, the things in personality that we all want, conscientiousness, agreeableness, self-esteem, that sort of stuff, whereas hubristic pride seems much more strongly related to stuff that nobody wants, like disagreeableness and shame.
That's fascinating. So just another piece of the puzzle in terms of how do you create, you know, an authentic, genuine, happy life. It seems like other people or relationships with other people are always involved in creating that kind of stability and long-term well-being. So
yeah, I think so.
I think this is great. You're the first person I've interviewed around this topic, and I really appreciate. I know all my listeners really are going to get a lot out of this too. So
great.
Just to wrap up, this is Coach Caroline Miller. Today we've been talking to Dr. Jessica Tracy. I will include a link to her email if she says this is okay. Is this okay?
Sure.
People can email you with other questions or possibly copies of your interviews or other research.
Yeah, and all my research is actually available on my website. So if you have a link to that, that might be a helpful resource.
Absolutely. I will absolutely do that. Well, I thank you so much. This has been really informative. And, you know, until the next time in the next podcast, this is Coach Caroline saying thank you for joining me today.